Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Green Table Talk. My name is Sadrina.
And I'm Andrea.
And we are your hosts this semester for the Green Table Talk.
Green Table Talk is a social justice podcast dedicated to shining light on the issues with guest hosts and offering poignant perspectives. Our goal is to give FGCU students the space to discuss issues and learn more information. We'll talk about everything we can and offer you, the audience, to hear from different voices. Today, we are discussing advocacy work at FGCU and beyond. This week, our guest is... Your name?
I'm Grace Brannigan.
Title?
I served until very recently as FGCU's 25th student body president.
Awesome. Welcome in.
So, Grace, it's so nice to have you.
Yes, I'm really excited.
Yes, I'm so excited. Can you tell us about yourself, like, besides being the 25th student body president?
Like, what?
Who are
what
you?
What was your life outside of
yeah,
that?
Like,
who sure. So, yeah, my name is Grace. I use she, her, hers pronouns. I am a senior. I'm a double major in history and political science. I have a minor in philosophy from originally from Orlando, Florida. When I am not doing this kind of stuff, my other passions, I really love cooking and baking. Dungeons and Dragons is like the passion of my life, I think, actually. Yeah, I mean, I think before I was a student body president, I did lots of different stuff. I was involved for 3 years with the Resident Housing Association.
Okay.
So I was the vice president and then the president of the Resident Housing Association.
Wow.
And before I was the student body president, I was the Senate president of the 24th student body Senate.
Really? I was in Senate when I was an undergrad.
Yeah. So I think after you left Senate, the 23rd student body Senate, I was the president of the following one.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, so we were in Senate
together.
We were
together. Yeah. For like 4 months, maybe.
Yeah, for like 4 months. That was a wild time.
Yeah, and then that was my sophomore year, and then my junior year, I was the Senate president and the president of the Resident Housing Association.
Okay,
there's
cool.
a trend in titles you can kind of see.
I see. I like that. You went up the hierarchy. Like,
yes.
You built your way up, and you... did the final last conquer one.
All you could do at FGCU is just like, you did it.
Well, I think I'm a competitive person.
Oh, okay.
And so if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it until I win. Right. Like, and so in my like head, right. In my brain was like, there is a hierarchy in this organization.
Mm-hmm.
And winning is being at the top of the hierarchy. And so, like, that's not the reason I wanted to do it, but I think that, like, a big part of my drive is that I'm a competitive person, and I saw, like, that opportunity to, like, grow and to, like, stretch my legs and stuff in that way, and to learn new skills and to challenge myself like that.
Okay, cool. So kind of going into that, we can lead to, like, talking about what inspired you to run for SG president.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of things. I think the first one, the main one, that inspired me to do any of this stuff is that when I was coming to FGCU, my biggest fear was that I was going to show up and there weren't going to be any gay people here, right? I'm a lesbian. I'm an out lesbian. I'm a butch lesbian. I'm really obnoxious about it most of the time. So, and so I had this fear that, like, I was coming to Southwest Florida and that there weren't going to be any gay people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was going to show up and everyone was going to be like, I don't know, like, that they were going to be hiding
around,
or, like,
look at you, and you're
yeah.
And to be fair, I have received my fair share of uncomfortable or hateful comments, not on this campus, but in this area.
I'm so sorry about that.
It happens. You know, but most of the time it's like you're in the Target parking lot and someone yells at you out of their car and you're like, come on, man.
Are you serious?
Oh, for real.
So you'll just be
living your life
and someone yells something at you?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So... a lot of women that I know or AFAB people that I know experience unwanted attention from men, like advances from men. When I experience unwanted attention from men, it is like
I'm sorry. Going back to that, what's AFAB?
Assigned female at birth. So
okay.
People that are born as women but might not necessarily identify that way.
Okay.
But, you know, aside from that, one of the big reasons that I wanted to do all of this kind of work is that if I were 18-year-old Grace and I had come to FGCU and the student body president was an out lesbian, I think that that would have really deeply changed the way that I perceived this community.
And I agree.
Yeah,
I definitely agree.
And I think even when I was doing my work in housing, I worked a little bit, and I think I'm going to talk about this later, but I worked a little bit on a gender-neutral housing initiative. And constantly I was thinking about, like, people that were that age, right? And I came out when I was 14, so I felt very secure in my identity. But a lot of people discover their truth here at university. And right. so mm-hmm. I was thinking a lot about, would those kids, would Grace at 18, would Grace at 16, would the people that are like her now, would they be proud of me? And can I
think they would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that was my big inspiration. And neither one of my parents went to college. And I'm first gen. Yeah. I'm also a first generation American. Welcome to the
club. Oh, really? Yeah.
Where are you originally from?
So my mom is from Belize. Mm-hmm. And my dad is from the United Kingdom. So they moved here after they got married. And so, like, when I graduate in May, I'll be the first Brannigan to have a degree. Bar none.
Oh, congratulations, Grace. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think it's like a lot of those things mixed together. And also, like, I see problems and I'm a solutions oriented person. And so sometimes to solve a problem, you have to be in a particular position. And right. so
you're an advocate.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wanted to solve problems that I was seeing, but I also wanted to be able to recognize problems and say, like, maybe I'm not the person equipped to solve these things. And can I use my skills to gather people that are equipped to solve these problems?
That's okay. awesome.
That's so good.
Staying on track with that, how do you stay knowledgeable about current events and issues related to your work? So we talked a little about like you wanting to be an advocate. How do you stay in the now about solving those kinds of problems? How do you understand and interpret those?
Well, I think in part it's about being an informed citizen generally.
Yeah.
So sometimes national things require you to be sensitive or thoughtful about what's happening on your campus because of what's happening nationally. Particularly when there's like a social movement or, you know, a big thing happening, right? But I think in terms of the community, it is a mix between when I was the president on my cabinet, surrounding myself with people on my cabinet that were parts of different communities, right? That could sort of report back and say, hey, these are the things that are happening in these communities that I'm a part of, right? Because I do think it's important also to recognize that as a white woman, not every space needs to be a space that I occupy a seat in. Mm. And so when I'm thinking about how to stay in touch with what's happening across different communities, particularly identity-based communities where I don't have that identity, it's about making sure that there are people on my team that have that identity.
Oh, Grace. What?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be everyone, right? Right. And when you are the student body president, or if we were going to, you know, put this in a different context and say I was the CEO of a company, I can't just show up to somebody's meeting and sit there and be just like some dude that's there. Like,
and that's being self-aware, because a lot of people yes, wouldn't be able to say that. A absolutely. Lot of people feel like they could play every single identity
and be in every single
because
space.
They're in that position.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, mm-hmm. Mm-mm. And it would make people uncomfortable. Like, there's no way for me to show up to an Asian American student union meeting and not be Grace Brannigan, the student body president.
Right. And do you know what? You sound like a leader. Like, you sound absolutely. Like a authentic leader. Like, you yes. are leading people of like a diverse community. I really appreciate that.
And understanding the people you lead. Me and Grace had a conversation one time and she was like, if you guys want to do that, let me know and I'll help support. I won't be there, though.
I said, okay, Grace. I mean, that's realistic, though. You don't yes. have to, like, be the forefront face for everything. No. Like, you can support in the background.
Absolutely.
Well, and I also think about, like, when I'm in queer spaces mm-hmm. and straight cis people show up to spaces that are for LGBTQ plus people, and it feels like they're trying to get their ally card punched. Like, they're trying to...
Yeah.
Yeah. I think know. That has a lot to do with, like, people that want to support, like, Black people. It's just a difference between supporting us and trying to, like, appropriate our culture.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can be knowledgeable. I can be tuned in. That doesn't mean that I need to be occupying space, mm-hmm. right? And I think that that's a big thing. And my chief of staff, Anastasia Samuels, who's a Black woman, taught me a lot about what was going on and what was important and what wasn't important, particularly with NPHC and MGC mm-hmm. sororities and fraternities. But at no point were we plotting about how to get me into those rooms. It was like, that's really none of my business. Unless somebody needs something, I'm not in the business of being like, okay, well, show me what's going on. You know, like,
yeah,
why would I do that?
No, like, I definitely agree. And as a member of the NPHC, I always feel like, you know, we don't always feel recognized at FGCU. So that's good to know that our names are being brought up in those conversations.
Oh, I'm watching, but I'm just not touching, you know, it's a look, don't touch situation.
understand. And I think it's good that you have the self-awareness to understand that they may need your support and they may need you in those spaces, but they don't need you present in those spaces. They just need your allyship and you being an advocate for us. Going into, like, I know you've gone to the Tallahassee multiple times, and so advocating advocating for students up there in Tallahassee with and understanding your power and advocacy while also understanding that those are people too. I hope that made sense.
Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. You really just answered the next question.
Yep.
So we're going to move on and just talk about how do you build relationships with, like, stakeholders, board of trustees, like, faculty, staff, like, people who are not students, community members. Like, how do you get your name out there?
So I think that it's tough. And I think I came in at a disadvantage, a unique disadvantage to me, which is that my predecessor, Alyssa Fleischer, who is a good friend of mine, was an extremely feminine woman. She's a cheerleader. And so when the board of trustees read my name on a piece of paper and said, oh, the new student body president is Grace Brannigan, they were expecting an Alyssa Fleischer type. And I pulled up wearing a men's suit, right, as or quote-unquote men's. I don't think clothing should be gendered. But and so immediately all of the people in the room are like, that is not what I was expecting.
Right.
And that is not a person I was expecting. And so I think that with boards of trustees, with traditionally more conservative institutions, right, like the government, like
just the state of Florida.
Yeah, places that are generally populated by older people. Is like, I have to come across as an informed, respectable individual, right? As a reasonable person, even when I'm not, when I don't agree with them. And so engaging with faculty and staff is very different than engaging with stakeholders like the Board of Trustees with other or with the government. And so I think that part of it is that you still have to be authentically you.
Right.
Right. You have to appear as a person. And so, like, I'm funny. I'd like to think I'm funny. And
you
so
are.
If you watched me in the Board of Trustees, probably once or twice a meeting, I crack a good joke.
Okay.
And, like, but I'm not disrupting the meeting to be funny.
Right.
Right. But I'm being personable and stuff. But at the same time, I think that standing your ground
is important.
Is important. And in the Board of Trustees in particular, you have to decide what hills are worth dying on. Because there's going to be issues sometimes where you want to say, like, I don't know about that, right? But they're not life or death issues, right?
I agree with you. Not everything needs to, like, have that conversation. Not everything needs to be addressed.
And you're going to annoy the trustees and you're going to discredit yourself in that room if you fight and die on every single hill.
Yeah.
Right? So for me, it was sort of threading that needle between deciding what was really deeply important and what I could let go. And for the community and stuff, I mean, it's about doing stuff that you are knowledgeable about or that you are good at and doing that in the community. So, like, my number one skill in all of this in building rapport and trust or relationships with any stakeholders is being knowledgeable. If you have an FGCU question, I should be able to answer it. And I should be able to cite, you know, our data, our statistics. Like, I know the demographic breakdown of the students that go to Florida Gulf Coast University. I know I'm familiar with, like, our financial situation.
So what's the demographic breakdown?
Yeah.
I knew she was going to ask that.
I just want to hear it.
So we are 8% Black. We are 23.9%-ish Hispanic or Latinx.
We're almost to the HSI status.
We're almost to HSI status. I think if we broke it down deeper, I think like 10 more Hispanic students would have to enroll for this, like 10 more than the previous year. And then we are a very small portion Pacific Islander and Asian American, which gets lumped in together, I think like sub 10%. I think we are 2% Native American. I know, I think if we were actually going to count those people, that there are less than 15 Native American students at FGCU. Everyone else is white. We are 58% woman. So we're
okay, so that's good.
Yeah, we are a majority woman institution, including in faculty and staff breakdown.
And then do you know what the current student population is for FGCU?
We're a little under 16,000.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
So she said she was knowledgeable. I believed her.
But that's how you make yourself be legitimate, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you only have a year, so like I only had a year in this position, it's about appearing as someone who, like, I am a person who is involved in this community. I have been involved since before you met me. Mm-hmm. And I know things, and I am just as proficient in these things as a staff member is, right? And so it's about thinking about the brand as well. I mean, something that Tyler, my vice president, and I did towards the end of our term is that Babcock Ranch Elementary School, which is very new, right, because Babcock Ranch is very new, mm-hmm. is they are starting a student government. It's like the project of their fourth grade class. They're starting a student government. Mm-hmm. And we went to the elementary school to talk about student government with fourth graders. And, like, obviously what we're doing at FGCU and what those kids are doing in the fourth grade, very different.
Yeah, right.
But that's about building community.
Yeah.
That's about Southwest Florida understanding and caring about FGCU. And those kids being interested in what is happening at the university nearest them. Because ultimately, like, those kids, like, when I was in the fourth grade, I mean, Orlando's my hometown, so, like, UCF is our university. I didn't know anything about UCF. I never went to a football or a basketball game. Like, I had no connection to that university, despite the fact that it was 30 minutes from my home, right? These kids have the opportunity to feel connected to an institution before they ever get there, right? And so I think that that's an important part of building community as well, is people seeing the students and the faculty and staff at FGCU as being experts in the community and being resources for the community, but even when people in the community are not attending the institution.
Okay, thank you for that.
That was great. I love Grace. No, I tell everybody, I said, y'all met Grace. She's great. Great.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I think it's really cool that you shared, you know, how you're first generation American, how you're first gen students here in college. Like, I think those are identities that you probably share with a lot of people on campus.
Absolutely. Yep. We're right there. We're besties now.
Yeah.
Because I'm both of them. I'm not a first gen American. I'm first gen college student. But
I mean, like, being a good leader is about finding common ground.
Absolutely. That's true.
And it gives you a more, sometimes people, we're going to go on a tangent real quick. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people come, I'll come back, Sadrina, don't worry.
It's okay, you know, I'll pull you back.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Sometimes people put people on pedestals, and because you're a student, you're the, you know, FGCU's 25th student body president, you have like this, hold you in such high regard. And my first semester, I voted for you, right? But
thank
I
you.
Didn't, you're welcome.
I appreciate your support.
I didn't know you. I just, like, one of my friends, like, vote for Grace. I was like, okay, great. Whole first semester, I just was like, Grace is untouchable. She's mm-hmm. an inaccessible human being. Mm-hmm. And when I met you, I went to, like, a Senate meeting or something, and in January, and I listened to you talk, and I was like, oh, she's a person. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have those commonalities, to find that common ground, to do things like this and talk with the students, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people view the student body president as inaccessible, view that kind of office as something you can't touch. And I think it's great and understandable to come on a podcast and be like, I'm also a first-gen student. Well, I'm also a first-gen thing.
And I think that the difficult thing, I think, personally for me in doing this kind of work has been that people do not no longer imagine me as a person. They right. imagine me as a position.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a people person. I love getting to know people, and I love making new friends, and I love talking to people. And so it's like a crutch. Like, it's like I'm golfing with a handicap mm-hmm. on trying to connect with the community. Because the position prevents you from connection in the ways that you're used to.
Right.
Right. And so I think that's like kind of what we were talking about earlier. You can never take off the hat. There is no room that I occupy on this campus where I'm not that thing.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I love your metaphors.
Thank you.
I've started telling people I start shooting from the hip.
Yeah, you're shooting from the hip.
Yes, it's my favorite thing. How do you incorporate diversity, equity, and inclusion principles into your advocacy efforts? So we talked a little bit about, like, how you make your cabinet diverse, mm-hmm. right? What other elements did you, like, do go in with intentionality to make sure it was diverse, equitable, and inclusive?
So I think it's all ground up, mm. right? So when Tyler and I ran together, we had to recognize what identities we did not have, mm-hmm. right? And one of our campaign promises was that we were going to prioritize the applications to our cabinet of people of color, of queer people, of BIPOC people generally. Like, we were going to seek out people from different communities. And so on my cabinet, there is a variety, or there was since we're retired now, but there's a variety of people, right? We had an international student at the beginning of the term before Micah resigned. So for the first like third of the term, there was two people of color. There was Barion's first language is not English. Like, we have several women. We have gay people, like people of different abilities, right? And mm-hmm. so it's ground up. It's like, I cannot start to consider what embodying diversity, equity, inclusion looks like if I am not talking about these concepts with the people around me who also are representative of different identities.
Right.
And the cabinet formed really naturally. Tyler and I did not make a list that was like, okay, we need one Black woman. We need two, like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that because we were telling people that we were interested in those kinds of perspectives, that those perspectives came to us. And so I think that that's kind of step one, right? And then I think step two, right, is to always take a moment and consider whenever you're doing anything, this is accessible to me. This thing is available to me. Is there something here that would make it not available to people of different identities, to people of different abilities, right? And that has to go all over the place. So I think it's hard to quantify it more tangibly, right? But I think a good example, so after the hurricane, Hurricane Ian, me and the provost, so Dr. Rieger, Dr. Timor, the vice provost, and the deans of all of the colleges are in these academic emergency meetings about how we're going to reclaim, how we're going to figure out what to do with all of the instructional days that we've lost because of the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And they start talking about doing what we did during Irma, which was just to extend the semester. We lost 4 days of instructional time during Irma. We, at that time, did not know this, but we were going to lose 11 to Ian. And so I was like, worst case scenario, we open doors a week from now. We will be having the semester until Christmas Eve. Like, the last day of finals day would be Christmas.
Yeah, that's a no.
Precisely, right? And they were like, well, and I was like, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. And when we were trying to figure out what we were going to do instead, a big thing I kept talking about was like, well, students are employed.
Mm-hmm.
There are students who go here who have to maintain employment to continue to go here.
To survive.
Yes. And those are students of, you know, poverty does not have a race, right? So those are students of all kinds of backgrounds.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking so much about it. And I was like, we have to consider whatever we do, making it so that students who have to work to merely be here can continue to be here.
Right.
And we have to consider that students that live in certain parts of this area are just not going to be able to return to FGCU this semester.
Yeah.
And so when we're talking about that, that's not a situation where people think a lot about diversity, equity, inclusion. They imagine the student body as a monolith, right?
Right.
And what you have to do always is you have to say, like, well, students with disabilities may have had a very different experience of this hurricane than mm-hmm. students that are able-bodied or whatever, right? So is campus going to be navigable for those students day one when we return, right? Are all of our mental health resources going to be available for students day one when we return? What are we doing to ensure that those things are available, right? Mm-hmm. So when people think about DEI, they think a lot about race, right? Which I think that the discussion...
It's a major part, but it's not the only part.
Yeah. Discussion about race is the dominant discussion in the United mm-hmm. States right now. And I think that that's really important. But I think that when we're thinking about it, diversity is step one, inclusion is step two, right? And I would say equity is step three, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're coming back from a disaster, when you're planning how to run an institution, when you're making all of these decisions, the goal should always be equity.
Yes. Completely agree. Because like you said, like a hurricane, a natural disaster does not have a race. Like it's not attacking a specific target. It's attacking everyone, whoever is in their bullseye.
Mm-hmm. But there's also identities that are differently affected by something like that. So like, although it affected everyone, it's going to affect people differently.
And I mean, I think the third question I asked the day after the hurricane was, when are we going to reopen the food pantry?
And you see, like from the conversation that we're having, I really enjoy that as a leader and as a person, you always try to put people first.
Right.
Yeah. I really appreciate that.
I mean, I was fine. I mean,
I get what you mean. Yeah.
The hurricane was an interesting. I live in Westlake Village, so I was out of my apartment for 11 days. Mm-hmm. I slept on the floor of the arena. I did not shelter at a friend's house or anything. I figured that, like, I couldn't call myself a leader and then also just, like, leave.
Yeah.
And so I was on the arena, and I was not invited to the Emergency Management Center so much as I invited myself there. Because Dr. Martin came to the arena the day after the hurricane, like after the storm had passed, and he was with Ruth Rodriguez, who is our emergency management, director of emergency management. And I go, hey, Dr. Martin, like, where are you hanging out right now? And he was like, oh, like in the police station, like that's where the Emergency Management Center is. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll see you there. And he was like, okay. And, like day one, in the first couple hours after, Dr. Martin and Ruth had spent the night on campus. He stays on campus during an event like that. There's like no one there because we can't reach anyone. Right. And we don't know if people are okay. And so it's like me, Dr. Martin, some cops, Ruth, David Vasquez, who's the VP for finance for FGCU, and no one else. And we're all just kind of like, wow, we have a lot to do. And then we're kind of like, we need more people.
Yeah.
And so it was just like a really fascinating period of time. I mean, I think it was like really, I learned so much about leadership in those 11 days that I don't think I would have learned otherwise.
So I have a question. Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself becoming like the president or chancellor of a university in the future? Or is that just like,
yeah, since you've had all this press, like all this experience.
No, I know. Yeah. I want to be an attorney. I'm going to go to law school. And I want to be a politician.
Okay.
Ultimately. But I think that my desire to be a politician is just my desire to do public service. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, yeah, if I became an attorney and I found academia more interesting or more compelling, that I could definitely see myself returning to be a chancellor and administrator at a university. I also think, though, that I detest when politicians engage in higher education. Yeah. And so I do.
I agree. But I feel like from your perspective, we like the way you're talking, what you've done, it's a different perspective. Mm-hmm. I think you would genuinely like add to the university. You know, I just think like you can be a multifaceted person. Like life takes you anywhere. Like you can go into politics and then you could probably like dabble as a professor. Mm-hmm. And then you see like, wow, like I like being a faculty, but there's more for me to do. So I don't want you to like steer away from like completely leaving higher ed in the background. I really think you working in an institution would be a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that I'll ever be able to leave higher education. Marco Rubio teaches a class at FIU. Did you
really?
Know that?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Once a year he teaches a class and he has to do it with the support of several teaching assistants to do like a lot of the paperwork type stuff. But his home office is in Miami. He teaches a class at FIU. And so I think that for me, like whatever kind of service I'm interested in doing, FGCU has done a lot for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
want to be able to invest in students like that wherever I am. Right. And so, yeah, I could see and I hope that I do get the opportunity to stay in some form or fashion. I think I would, I think I'd really like to be a professor. Actually.
Yeah.
You would be great. I'd take your class.
Yeah. Not even to like talk about myself, but I wanted to go to law school originally too.
Gotcha.
But like meeting individuals in the MLD Center and like my mentors really like made me feel like higher education is where I belong right now. Mm-hmm. Like I see myself going to law school eventually in the future, but like I feel like higher ed and like helping individuals that have these different identities is a priority for me.
Yeah. And I mean, if the average age of a law student is 25. So at most law schools, most students did not immediately go from undergrad to law school. They worked for a period of time. I know that if I took a year off, I would never go back.
Same.
I'd never make it. But yeah, I mean, I think that people imagine that like your career is this like stagnant thing. Like,
yeah.
And that's what makes you feel burnt out, though. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like generations prior to us, like, woke up in the morning, went to work, came home, talked to the kids, watched TV, go to sleep. And yeah. It was the same thing every single day.
And you, like, die a slow death that way.
Oh, no, yeah. Seriously. And, like, and I feel like with Gen Z, like, we've opened the doors to so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've done so much more. Like, we're living our lives. Like, mm-hmm. we're not surviving, we're living. Mm-hmm. And I really like that.
Just like the Europeans.
No, yeah. And I think, well, the other thing is that I think that we're learning and living that you are not exclusively the thing that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like people can do lots of things. And oh my God, this is a lesson I had to learn in a really difficult way, I think, when I became the student body president, was that I, before I was all of these things, and after I'm all of these things, I will still be Grace, who loves and is loved and has hobbies and passions and dreams that have nothing to do with this,
mm-hmm.
right? And my identity cannot be this thing that I do. And so I think that young people and Gen Zers generally are kind of learning that as a community is like, I refuse to be the thing that I do for work.
Yeah,
right. I agree. No, I definitely agree. And, you know, as our conversation comes to an end, Grace, you've left a impact.
Deep.
You have left a legacy here at FGCU.
Yep.
How does that feel? Like, tell us about that.
Yes. We're listening.
I think when you get into this kind of work at first, you think a lot about what your legacy is going to be like. I mean, you think a lot about, oh, this is a creaky chair.
Yes.
You think a lot about what are people going to think of me when I'm done?
Mm-hmm.
What will people remember me for? Will I be remembered at all? Right. And then you actually start doing the work and the days come and the problems come and you don't think about the end at all. And so when I was finished on April 1st, it felt a lot to me as if the end had come on very suddenly. Right. But the reality is that the work that I've been doing for the past year is a culmination of work that I've done for 4 years. And so I think I'm very proud of my legacy, even though I don't know that my legacy has materialized fully yet for me. But I also think that in doing this and in the time that I've spent doing it and the people that I've met, the things that I'm most proud of are the things that probably no one will ever know about or like only a small group of people know about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I think that the feeling is tremendous. And when I walk around on campus frequently, faculty or staff will stop and say something to me as if we know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. they will say, and everyone has something kind to say about me and my time and my service, and particularly about the Board of Trustees. And every time I'm blown away, every time I'm going to cry in front of Merwin Hall or whatever. And so I think for me, that's the legacy I'm interested in,
mm-hmm.
is that professors, staff members, students watched me do this work for a year and understand that the potential for students to be great requires that a community invests in them. And I would not have been able to do this work, and I would not have been able to do it as well as I think that I did do it if I did not have a community that invested in me the way that this community has, right? And I talked about that at Lavender graduation, right, which is a graduation ceremony for LGBTQ+ grads, which is like when I announced I was running for president, the very first people that I did not know were coming to me to tell me that they were proud of me, right? Because gay people all across this campus, queer people all across this campus suddenly felt as though they had a champion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me that's the part of my legacy that I'm most proud of, is that I showed people of my identity or from different marginalized identities that can find common ground with me that it is not just possible to do well, but it is possible to do the best, right? And to be the best. And so for me, the legacy I'm concerned about and the one that I'm proud of is that there's a gay kid that goes to school here right now that felt represented by me in a way that they could not have felt represented by somebody else.
Yeah.
And there are queer kids all across this campus who feel that I went to work every day for them.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the legacy I'm proud of, because I hope that they show up to campus and that they feel that this is a home that they're welcome in and that this is a home that they could participate in the change of.
So beautiful.
Do you want a napkin to
wipe? Girl, I told you last time I don't really be crying.
Okay, you just make the sound
effect. It's the sound effects that show how great the emotion was, because it's not like I don't want to cry. I just can't. I'm a robot.
I'm a crier.
I'm in between. Yeah, I'm in between. Like,
I'm a crier.
Certain stuff makes me cry.
I can't. All that crying, hoopla and hootenanny, I can't really get down.
I watch a sad movie, it's over.
You see, movies will make me cry, though. Like, movies are more likely to make me cry than real people.
Movies, video games, books, a particularly sad TikTok. I'm a crier.
Oh, yeah, you're a crier.
Did y'all watch Marcel the Shell of Shoes On, the movie came out?
Girl, what?
No. Okay, watch it. But I watched it in a theater with a friend, and then the only other person in the whole theater was just, like, this one dude, like, this grown man. Uh-huh. And he was, like, two or three rows in front of me, and I cried for maybe that whole movie.
Oh,
it's, like, a two-and-a-half-hour movie. I wasn't, like, but, okay. Like, there is a steady stream down my cheek for, like, most of the movie. And my friend didn't cry at all.
Have you all ever watched the movie Lovely Bones?
No.
Oh, that's a movie that made me cry. Like, that's a really good movie.
Mm. I don't be crying. So,
It's good for you.
I don't have any desire to. Somebody was crying with me earlier, and I was like, I want to cry with you.
So are you one of those people that just, like, slowly pat the back? Like,
yes. Oh, I'm like, they're there.
Oh, get out of here.
They're there.
I'm a hugger.
It's okay, Pumpkin.
Well, I'm a hugger, too.
I'll hug you. I just am like,
crying makes me uncomfortable.
Doesn't make me uncomfortable, but I'm like, I want to cry with you, but I can't. It's like my brain.
So when's the last time you think that you cried? Oh, you are not a crier. Okay.
When was the last time I cried? Yesterday.
Oh. I don't, like,
But I save it for home. If something bad happened to me while I was at work as the student body president, I didn't burst into tears in the room, right? Like, I would be like, I'm going to my car now, and I would go home.
And you see, I think there's, like, different crying, though. Oh, I feel like that's, like, that frustration.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Oh, my God. Like, I have to let it all out.
After the hurricane... Yeah. When people were upset about the decision that had been made about the academic calendar, and they were sending me very not kind emails, and they were making very not kind comments about me on Instagram.
I'm so sorry.
It happens. People were scared, and it was an outlet for them to be scared. I don't blame them. But I remember I would walk out of the emergency management center, and I would get in my car, and I would call Jill, the student government advisor, Dr. Jill Pettibone, who now works at the University of South Florida. Okay. And I would call her. And I would burst into tears on the phone. Aww. And I'd be like, they're being so mean to me, Jill. And Jill would be like, turn off your phone. Turn off your phone. You're being stupid. Shout out to Jill. Jill's a real one. Jill's coming to graduation.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, Grace, it's been so great having you. Yeah. I really enjoyed our conversation. I feel like I got to know you on a personal note.
Absolutely. And I've been sitting here this whole time trying to figure out the last time I cried, and I cannot remember.
So we need to continue creating this culture of belonging.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
It's okay here. I love you.
Thank you.
I just love what you do. And that sounded really weird, but I just love you, Grace. I love you as a entity. I love your mission. I love what you stand for, because you've done such great work.
You're really an influential person.
And people love you and people adore you. And I'm so glad that you were
flowers.
Yes, I'm so glad that you were our student body. I'm so glad I voted for you.
I'm blushing.
Okay, great.
You can see me again at commencement. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be my speaker at commencement.
Aww.
And my commencement speech is a kind of teaser, is about choosing to be kind.
Okay, well, we can't wait to see who you become and what you do.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm going to follow your... And when you become a politician, I'm going to vote for you, too.
Thank you.
Even if I'm not in the state, I'm going to vote for you.
Do not commit voter fraud.
Okay. This has been a wonderful episode. See you all next week.
Thank you.